Rosario told Rachel, with a grin. Until Angel recreated her war cry. Oh, that's what the sound was. Rachel smiled at me, and not in a mean way. I thought Dante was whining again about having his bandages changed. Of course, everyone thought that was hysterical, myself included. Rachel launched into an amusing story of her own regarding Brian and a loose cow. She was getting to the good part with the emu when I felt a touch on my arm. Marcus. He did a little head tilt to indicate he needed to talk to me, about Nick, most likely. I left the media room and followed him a short distance to an unoccupied office. He remained silent until he'd closed the door, then asked,
Are you okay?
Physically, yes, I said. His expression was unreadable. Are you mad? He sat on a corner of the desk and folded his arms.
You said you were following a solid hunch, but I don't understand why you went out there on your own. We're slammed, but I could have sent someone to be your backup. I expected better judgment from you.
My mouth worked soundlessly for a few seconds before I could form actual words.
Better judgment? I didn't plan to fall onto a rusted car door and break my leg. Maybe someday you can tell me what it's like to have everything in your life go exactly according to plan, where nothing unexpected happens and nothing ever goes wrong.
Angel,
No. I stabbed a finger into his sternum. You listen to me, Captain Controlling. It wasn't just a hunch. It was a goddamn lead, a good one that I dug up and followed. And I even found something. But hey, I guess I should check with you and the tribe every time there's a possible decision to be made, because obviously I'm too stupid to think for myself and need someone to hold my fucking hand.
Fuck.
Marcus stood and seized my arms, jaw tight.
Angel, I don't think you're stupid.
But you think I've got poor judgment? I shot back, voice quavering.
That one stung, because I knew all about stupid, shitty choices. I'd made a whole lot of them in my day, but thought I was past all that. Marcus sighed and squeezed my hands.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that, because it isn't true at all. You're right. You pursued a hunch that turned into a solid lead, just like any good cop would do. And you had every reason to believe this would be a simple in-and-out operation.
I eyed him. And?
And? I don't expect you to check with the tribe every time you make a move, because you're competent and careful.
That's more like it.
His mouth twitched in a wry smile. I hope you realize how hard it is for me to say that.
I'm actually surprised your head didn't explode. Our dating relationship had been chock full of his well-intentioned, controlling behavior.
Marcus winced. I deserve that.
Nah, you've redeemed yourself about a million times over by putting up with this tribe shit. I took a deep breath. And now that we have all the other stuff sorted out, I admit it would have been a smart move to at least let Brian know where I was going in case shit went south. As it was, no one knew. He inclined his head.
No argument for me on that, apart from my being a controlling prick. It's not about asking permission. It's about keeping the team in the loop. And you are a valued member of the team.
Y'all have my back as much as I have yours. The old loser me would have labeled checking in as control. I knew better, but it felt as if it was only now fully sinking in. It's cool. Next time I have a premeditated bit of criminal activity in mind, I'll give Brian a heads up. Marcus smiled.
Good deal. So, what was the lead that took you to Big Bubba's, and what did you find?
I gave him the rundown about Reno and the car chase, my talk with Ben Roth and Agent Aberdeen's involvement. This was in the CD tray, I said, handing him the Double Dime Diner punch card. But I have no idea what the letters and numbers could mean.
Marcus frowned at the card.
I got nothing, he said after a moment. Sorry.
No worries. Might not even be related to our current drama. I took the card back. Now, I have an unrelated, personal question for you.
Shoot.
What is the deal with Rachel and Rosario? You and Rachel were an item, and then you weren't, and now she and Rosario are making goo-goo eyes at each other. Also, Rachel was actually nice to me, which is beyond comprehension. Am I in a coma and having a totally unrealistic dream?
Rachel has had a change of heart about you,
he said, shrugging as if that explained everything. Yeah, that's the creepy part, I said, eyes narrowing. Why? She's always hated my guts, convinced I'm going to blow up the tribe or worse.
Only a few people know the whole truth about why you had to be regrown,
Marcus said.
The story that was circulated was somewhat vague, but the gist was that you suffered severe unexpected side effects from a mod you used during the rescue in New York.
A smile tugged up one corner of his mouth.
Which is true.
But hardly the whole truth, I pointed out. V12 was indeed the mod I'd legitimately used in New York, but the whole addiction thing afterward was my own damn fault, leading to my dramatic disintegration on Mardi Gras.
And as for why the side effects progressed to the point of deterioration,
Marcus continued,
it was leaked that you took a larger than usual dose in order to save the tribe from exposure, which is also true.
Whatever. And she bought that?
Somewhat. Rachel can be a real sucker for selfless acts of valor, but she wasn't really sold until Dr. Nikas had a talk with her.
He shrugged.
I don't know the details of what he said, but I gather he gave her a bit of a scolding, gentle, but no less scathing, and suggested she reconsider her outlook and her opinion of your worth and loyalty.
Oh, man. A scolding from Dr. Nikas is the worst because he's so darn nice. Tears pricked my eyes just thinking about it. I'd been on the receiving end of a scolding or two from him. So, why did you and Rachel break up? I asked, totally casual-like. I mean, you know, not to pry or anything, really. His eyes crinkled in humor.
Right, not prying at all.
It was mutual and amicable. He paused.
Okay. I was the one who broke it off. But she was totally cool and mature about it. It felt a bit odd to be so new in this position and already dating an employee, especially with the age difference. Plus, I felt like I needed to pay more attention to my work here.
A wince flashed across his face. His work here was a sore subject, and now wasn't the time to prod it. Age difference? I asked. How old is she? Rachel looked like she was in her 20s, but that didn't mean a whole lot when it came to zombies.
About 70 years old, he said. She was an army nurse during the Vietnam War. One day, she was in a medevac chopper with two wounded men and a third soldier. The chopper got shot down, and Rachel was hurt pretty badly. So was the soldier, but then...
Oh, this is Pierce, right? No, wait, he was Francis back then. He gave me a sour look.
You're ruining my story.
It's a little predictable, I said. The soldier was Francis Pietro Pierce, and he turned Rachel, and she's been with him ever since. Marcus heaved a sigh.
You're leaving out all of the tension and the horror when she sees him eat the brains of the dead pilot. But yes, he turned her yada yada.
Wait a sec. I thought Rachel hated Kyle because back when he was a Saberton operative, he killed her father. How is that possible if she's 70-something years old? Did Kyle take out a 90-year-old dude? He's only been a zombie for a few years, so it's not like he was working ops half a century ago.
She hates him, that's for sure.
He sobered.
But the man Kyle killed was actually Rachel's son, who was 9 years old when her unit was deployed to Vietnam, and in his 50s when he died.
Ouch, I said. I can't even imagine what it must be like to have your kid die, no matter how old they are. I guess I should get over my own dislike of her.
I think you'd like her, Angel,
Marcus said.
And I'm not just saying that. She's a survivor, like you.
The unexpected compliment warmed me all the way through. Thanks.
Speaking of surviving, I know you probably want to stay here with Nick, but I think you should go to New Quest Corps when we swap out security people.
I started to protest and sighed. You're right. The best thing I can do is help Dr. Nikus. He chuckled.
That was easier than I thought it would be. I didn't even have to point out that you'd get to ride in the helicopter.
Oh.
Be out back in,
he checked his watch,
half an hour.
Will do.
Oh, and you might want to consider a change of clothes first, maybe even a shower.
I looked down at my raggedy crop top shirt and bloody ripped pants. You make good sense.
I do try.
Chapter 32. I took a super quick shower to wash off blood and muck, then changed into my last pair of clean jeans and a borrowed scrub top. Reno's Double Dime Diner punch card, with the mystery letters and numbers, went into my jeans pocket, and the ruined fatigue pants got tossed into the trash. My phone rang as I was shoving my toothbrush into its travel case, my house landline, which meant it was Kang. Hey, dude. What's up?
Just had a visitor.
I narrowed my eyes. Like a knock-on-the-door kind of visitor? It's not even 6 a.m.
Exactly like that, he said. An FBI agent who wanted to talk to both you and your dad.
Fuck. Let me guess. Special Agent Sorsha Aberdeen?
That's her. She flashed her ID when I opened the door.
Double fuck.
What did you tell her?
That you weren't here, and that I hadn't seen you since last night, and that, as far as I knew, your dad was out of town.
Fuckity fuck 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 shit fuck.
Did she tell you what she wanted to talk to us about?
Nope. Didn't leave her card, either.
She wanted to see me in person, not just have a phone chat. And what the hell did she want with my dad? Did she ask who you were?
Uh-huh. I told her I was Seo Jun Kang, your house guest. Seo Jun is also the father of John Kang, but I didn't need to tell her that part.
Jesus, what if she'd asked for ID?
She didn't, but I got it covered. Chill.
Chill? Huh. But then I reminded myself that Kang had been around for a couple thousand years, and surely learned a thing or two about survival. Okay, sorry. Thanks for the heads up.
Anytime. I owe you.
He hung up. The phone call reminded me that I hadn't told Alan about Nick. I sent a quick text.
Nick is sick, same mess. Neither of us will be in, too much to do, sorry.
His answer came back seconds later.
Do what you need to do, keep me posted.
I shoved the phone into my pocket, then returned to Nick's room. My zombie baby Philip stood on duty beside the open door. Hey, ZB, I said. What's up?
Shambler watch, he replied, just in case.
Bear's whole group had turned, which meant there was still a chance he would too. Yeah, I sighed. Best to play it safe.
I'm sorry you're going through this,
Philip said quietly.
I know Nick is special to you.
He is. I blinked back tears. Thanks.
Anytime, ZM.
I gave him an affectionate punch in the bicep, then stepped into the room. Bear sat by the bed in a comfy chair that someone must have brought in for him. Nick thrashed and growled in the restraints. Any change? I asked, already knowing the answer. Nick hadn't miraculously recovered since I was last in here.
Maybe. I don't know.
He rubbed his eyes, expression bleak.
Sometimes I think he recognizes me. Probably wishful thinking.
I gave his hand a squeeze. I'm about to leave for New Quest Corps. I can be more useful there, helping Dr. Nikas work on a cure for this shit. And I want to be close by in case they need more samples from me. I hope you aren't mad I'm going. He covered my hand with his.
I know you're as gutted by this as anyone, and you won't stop till you dig up the answers. I don't think Nick will... Angel.
Nick rolled his head toward me.
Angel. He knows you.
Bear leapt to his feet.
Nick, we're right here.
I touched Nick's restrained arm. It's going to be all right. Nick shuddered and moaned, burbly and wet.
Angel.
I brushed my fingers over his cheek, braced for him to snap at them. But instead he went still, milky eyes on me. He breathed out a long sigh.
Angel.
Look at you, pining for me, I said, throat tight. I'm going to tease you about this later once you're back to yourself. I reluctantly withdrew. Nick jerked against the restraints again and howled. The sound tore at my heart. I'll be back as soon as I can, I told Bear, struggling to keep my voice even.
You can't go now.
His eyes held desperate hope.
Look how calm he was with you.
I don't want to go, but I have to. I nodded toward Nick. For him, for a cure. The thought of leaving Nick like this punched holes through my gut, but I couldn't stay here when I could be trying to save him. Bear sat heavily and scrubbed his hands over his face.
Sorry. You're right.
It's okay. I get it. Make sure you eat, please.
Will do,
he said, though I wasn't convinced.
Take care of yourself, Angel. You hear me?
Loud and clear. After a final heart-wrenching look at Nick, I returned to the media room and found Portia, Jane, Victor, and my dad still there. Y'all need to go back to bed, I said with asperity.
I have too much on my mind to sleep, Jane said.
Besides, I have work to do. My constituency is in an uproar.
I don't think I could sleep either, Portia added, and I'm used to early hours.
Well, I ain't, my dad said, pushing to his feet. It's past my bedtime.
I'm about to head over to New Quest Corps with the fresh security team to help Dr. Nikas, I told him.
You do that, he said, but you be sure to wake me if you need anything.
I will. I kissed his cheek before he toddled off to wherever he was sleeping.
Angel, Portia said, do you think it would be possible for me to go with you? I have extensive lab experience, and though it's not my field of study, I'm sure I can be of use.
Hell, she'd be useful for making Dr. Nikas happy if nothing else. Let me check with Marcus, but I'm all for it.
His office was only a corridor away, but I saw no need to expend that much energy. Can Portia come to NQC? I texted. I like her, Dr. N likes her, you should say yes.
Yes, fine, he replied, and I could almost hear him roll his eyes.
Marcus said yes, I told Portia. If you need to take anything with you, grab it. We leave in about 5 minutes.
Be right back, she said,
and strode quickly off. I glanced at Jane. Could you make sure Bear eats? I asked. He's pretty stressed, and I have a feeling he'll forget.
You can count on me.
That was never in doubt, I said, smiling. How's it going with your district? She winced.
There's a lot of fear. Marcus has set up a camera and microphone in the conference room so I can make a statement. Then I'm being interviewed by Brennan Masters for the news.
Her forehead puckered. You don't look too happy about it.
I'm not.
She met my eyes.
I represent those people. Why am I holed up in here while they're vulnerable? Because I have connections? It doesn't sit right with me. But Marcus and the security chief are adamant.
The security chief was Pierce Gentry. Of course he'd be adamant about protecting Jane. None of us want to see you hurt, I said. Besides, you need to keep yourself safe so you're around for your people and... I stopped, made a face.
and nothing. You're right. I'd pitch a fit if I was forced to stay in lockdown when I wanted, needed, to be out doing something, especially for people I care about. Who are we to tell you where to be?
Thank you, Angel. She stood. After I finish the interview, I need to make some public appearances. I'm going to talk to Marcus right now. I have Victor for protection, and I'm sure he and Mr. Gentry and I can come to a satisfactory arrangement.
Sure, I said with a snort. After Gentry tells you all the reasons you can't leave.
Jane smiled sweetly.
I've spent enough time in Congress to be quite adept at dealing with bullshit.
You go, girl, I said with a grin.
Pierce didn't stand a chance against her. She and Victor headed out. Portia stepped aside to let them pass, then entered, carrying an elegant dark leather briefcase.
Ready when you are.
Let's ditch this place.
I led her through the lab and garage, then out the back of the building, where a helicopter crouched on a bare patch of ground. Kyle, Rachel, and Brian waited nearby. Brian stepped toward us.
Dr. Antilles, may I help you in?
I would be most grateful, she replied.
Pure class and elegance. I took mental notes on how she carried herself. Kyle and Brian both helped Portia get settled and buckled up. Then Brian plugged in her headset and showed her which channels were for public or private conversation. Brian gestured for me to climb in.
We'll be relieving Dan, Raoul, and Pierce.
At the mention of Pierce's name, Rachel gave Brian a measuring look. Rachel wasn't one of the people allowed to know Pierce was Pietro, but now I wondered if she'd figured it out on her own. More power to her. I took the seat facing Portia's, glad that I'd paid attention during the headset instructions. Brian took the front seat by the pilot, a no-nonsense middle-aged woman. This was only my second time riding in a helicopter, and the first had been a vastly different experience. It had been a military-style chopper, manned by tribe people who knew how to handle the brain-starved, injured zombie they'd plucked from raging floodwaters. There had been no plush seats or passenger headsets to block out the loud rotor noise. Not that I cared. The chopper had saved my dad's life, and that was all that mattered. Kyle sat beside me, and Rachel across from him. The pilot secured the doors, then settled in the cockpit and started the rotors. I put my headset on as the noise level rose, then gawked out the window as the ground dropped away. Portia's face shone with delight as she took in the early morning sky and the view. Ahead of us, the sunrise was a slash of fire along the horizon. I pulled the punch card out of my pocket and frowned down at it, hoping that the answer would miraculously come to me in a fit of brilliance. TPR 1064638. TPR. Tupperware? Hell, maybe Reno wanted to upgrade his food storage containers. Kyle tapped me on the wrist, then held up three fingers. When I looked at him stupidly, he pointed to the headphones. Oh, right. I switched to channel 3. He nodded toward the card.
Why do you have an EMR number?
That's the only clue I salvaged from the Big Bubba mission. What's an EMR number?
Electronic medical records? TPR plus 7 digits is Tucker Point Regional Hospital.
Excitement raced through me in a tingly wave. So this is a person's medical file?
I suspect so, Kyle said. Normally, only an admin or a doctor assigned to the patient can access the records, in which case, all that's needed is the patient's name and date of birth. They would rarely, if ever, use the patient number to pull up the records, though it's not out of the realm of possibility.
What could one of Christie's people, namely Reno Larson, do with the number?
If he located or created a back door to the EMR database, he'd be able to access the file with the patient number, possibly without leaving a trace.
I thrust the card at him. Can you find out whose record that is? He waved the card away.
I have it memorized. I'll make a call after we land.
I did a little jiggy dance in my seat,
then joined Portia in watching the scenery go by. Whose medical record would Christy want? And more importantly, why? She sure hadn't gone about getting it in a legitimate way, but Reno's high-speed flight from the cops had happened before Douglas Horton became the first Shambler case, which meant it was probably something completely unrelated to our current crisis. The pilot began a gradual descent a few miles from Newquest Corps, low enough for me to see people below tip their faces up to watch us fly past. The cars seemed to crawl along the highways compared to us. One of the cars made a turn onto the road that led to Newquest Corps. No big deal, except that it was a dark green Chevy Impala. Kyle, that might be the FBI agent, Sorsha Aberdeen. He didn't respond, which meant he'd returned to the main channel. I waved at him and pointed to my headset. Portia didn't need to hear any of this. He switched back to three, and I repeated what I'd said. He nodded, then tapped Brian on the shoulder and held up four fingers. I was tempted to switch over and listen in, but decided Kyle would simply pass along my observation. There wasn't much we could do about Sorsha except be on our toes. The helicopter dropped lower and circled the ugly white lump that was Newquest Corps. A limo was parked out front with a black sedan behind it. Reno exited the sedan as Billy gave Christy a hand out of the limo's back seat. She shaded her eyes and looked up, then gave us a cheerful wave. I flipped her off. She wouldn't be able to see it, but it made me feel better. The pilot touched down gently on the roof, then let the rotors wind down. I hopped out once the doors were open and helped Portia out. "Have you flown in a helicopter before?" I asked her.
"No, never. That was delightful."
I returned her smile and tried not to think about bucket lists and whether helicopter ride was on hers. Brian escorted us to the stairwell and downstairs to the LZ-1 research suite. Portia's eyes were bright with interest as she took everything in. We had a few minutes before Christy made her way up here, more if she stopped at the coffee stand downstairs for a chai latte. And maybe that car hadn't been Sorsha's. After all, surely there were plenty of dark green Impalas on a somewhat remote back road, headed toward Newquest Corps. Plenty, really. Raoul and Dan greeted us as we entered the main lab. Though they looked alert, it was clear they were bored out of their minds. Not too much excitement on the night shift. Fritz leaned against a counter, coffee in hand, and murmured a polite good morning. Reg sat in one of the work bays, poring over data. Beside him was a large whiteboard, filled with Dr. Nikas's unique shorthand. He glanced up with a distracted, "Yo," then returned to his work. In the next bay, Beardzilla had his head down on the table, fast asleep, and Harry Tech sat and stared, eyes bloodshot. Had Christy given them any downtime? Nearby, Pierce and Dr. Nikas stood with their heads together in discussion. Whatever the topic, Dr. Nikas looked stressed. Yet at the sight of Portia, he brightened like a kid who got a pony on Christmas. He left Pierce scowling at the interruption and strode toward us.
"Dr. Antilles, Portia, I'm so very delighted by your offer of assistance."
"I truly hope I can be of use, Ari," she said with a warm smile.
Dr. Nikas seemed to remember there were other people in the room.
"Ah, Pierce Gentry, may I introduce Dr. Portia Antilles?"
Pietro had known Portia via Jane, but Pierce was meeting her for the first time.
"Dr. Antilles, it's a pleasure to have you here."
"The pleasure is mine,"
Portia replied, shaking his hand. Pierce's expression flickered for the barest instant, then he gestured to a nearby chair.
"Would you care for water or coffee?"
"Coffee with a little sugar would be lovely. Thank you."
Like Dr. Nikas, he could smell her cancer, I realized, and he was being extra nice because of it. I'd never seen him offer to fetch coffee for anyone before.
"Coffee, one sugar coming up."
Pierce smiled and glanced at Brian, who nodded and strode off. Okay. Still the Pierce I knew and loved. I couldn't imagine what it would be like to sense illness in other people, whether you wanted to or not. Horrifying, most likely. Sure, there'd be times when you could catch a disease early and get the person timely treatment, but there would also be situations like this, where the person was dying, and there wasn't a damn thing you could do about it apart from a horribly slim chance of successfully making them a zombie. And turning wouldn't be an option for most people, since we had to be selective about who we zombified. Too many zombies, and bad shit would happen. It was like not letting more people into a lifeboat because it would sink. What a terrible burden that must be. I stepped close to Pierce and murmured softly, "I think Agent Sorsha Aberdeen might be on her way here." Pierce gave a micro nod.
"Brian notified me before you landed. The best thing we can do is not arouse any suspicion."
"Does that mean you're leaving?" I asked. After all, she might have questions for a man who used to work in New York for Saberton, then abandoned it all to live in the Deep South. Pierce glowered.
"Yes, I've already considered that. And yes, the most prudent course of action is for me to leave with Raoul and Dan. Just be polite, and don't give her any info she doesn't need."
Holy shit. Pierce was actually removing himself from a potentially sticky situation. "I'm so proud of you," I said, and pretended to wipe a tear away.
"Fuck off, Angel,"
he said amiably, and headed off to where Raoul and Dan waited by the door. The scent of fresh brains wafted over me. Rachel, with a container full of chunks. She locked eyes with Fritz, lifted a piece, and made a show of slowly slurping it down, tongue darting out to lick her lips clean of the dripping brain juices. Fritz made a yuck face, but surprised me by offering her an ever so slight wry smile, giving her props for successfully squicking him out. Brian returned with Portia's coffee, which she accepted gratefully. As Raoul, Dan, and Pierce left, the elevator down the hall dinged. A second later, I heard the thap-thap of Christie's shoes. Wedges rather than heels today, perhaps.
"Good morning, Pierce,"
Christie caroled in a way too cheerful voice. Pierce's reply wasn't loud enough for me to hear, but Christie laughed.
"Oh, you're always such a grump in the mornings."
The door to the stairs banged shut behind Pierce and the other two men. Christie entered the lab, giving a little poke to the sleeping Beardzilla on her way past. No sign of Reno.
"Nice to see you here bright and early, Angel," she said sweetly.
She swept a measuring look over Portia.
"And who is this, Ari? A new lab assistant?"
Portia set aside her coffee and stood, elegant and classy as fuck.
"I'm Dr. Antilles."
Her tone was cultured and smooth with a hint of polite indulgence.
"And you are?"
Christie hesitated, clearly expecting somebody to jump in and introduce her. When no one did, Christie stuck her hand out.
"Dr. Christie Charish, a pleasure to meet you."
Portia shook her hand, then released it, and turned away to study a sheaf of printouts on the counter. Christie's expression tightened, but she pivoted away and dropped her briefcase heavily on a table. Then became very interested in data on the computer. If she was trying to make Portia feel bad by ignoring her, she was failing miserably. It was clear Portia didn't give a genteel fuck and outclassed Christie in the snubbing department. I masked a grin, then busied myself with loading prepped samples into the centrifuge and restocking supplies. After a few minutes, Christie shut the computer off and grabbed her briefcase.
"If anyone needs me, I'll be in the cell culture room,"
she announced, then sailed out of the room with Fritz in her wake. Portia glanced after Christie and sighed.
"I was terribly rude to her."
"You didn't see me stopping you," I said with a wink. She chuckled.
"Yes, everyone tensed when she entered. I suppose I assumed she's a difficult person to work with."
"Difficult is a nice way to describe her," I said. "Also, bitchy, heartless, snide, arrogant."
"Angel?"
Dr. Nikas gave me a look.
Dr. Charish is perhaps all of those things, but she and I have already made a number of advances together.
Rachel lowered her hand from her ear.
Kyle says Agent Aberdeen has entered the building.
I glanced around, only now realizing that Kyle had slipped out. I think I'm going to go check on the gators. Avoiding Sorsha at all costs was the best tactic for me. She had asked around about my dad and me, then knocked on my door before dawn, and it wasn't because she wanted to play patty cake. I sure as hell didn't need to get arrested or detained, not with Nick and everyone else needing a cure. Not to mention, I had no idea how much she knew about zombies, or whether she believed we were monsters who needed to be exterminated. But I had an ugly feeling she knew I was a zombie. If so, my presence might make her suspect that others here were zombies too. Hopefully, if I stayed out of sight, it wouldn't even occur to her to wonder. Except I also really needed to know why the hell she was here. She was one big, horkin' unknown. Did she already know I was in the building? Did she suspect the tribe of evil doing? Or Christy? We'd all done our share of illegal shit. Hell, I had killed people. No matter what her reason for being here, I needed to snoop and stay out of sight. Easy. Sure. I sprinted to the gator room and closed the door behind me, then sent a quick text to Kang. I'm at NQC. That FBI agent just showed up. I'm ducking her. That sucks. Good luck ducking. Keep me posted. The larger of the two big gators lifted his head, cloudy eyes flicking open. Hello, sweeties, I murmured as I crouched by the fence. Biggie plodded close and pressed his snout against the chain link. I stuck my fingers through the gap and stroked his nubby hide, then glared, anger rising, at the sight of a 4-inch square of scaly skin missing from the base of his tail. Below it was a ragged strip, as if the square had been cut then ripped free, taking more hide with it. The wound seeped blood, though the edges showed signs of healing, not as much as a regular zombie, but more like keeping the status quo. Scowling, I rubbed Biggie's snout. Who did that to you, big guy? He snorted and growled low. The other big gator bellowed and turned its head my way. I beckoned it over. If your buddy is Biggie, then you must be Tupac, right? Tupac snorted, then splashed out of the pool and toward me, followed by the smaller gators. The entire group lined up side by side along the fence, snouts pressed against the chain link. All but the smallest two bore wounds like Biggie's.
Grr.
Are y'all okay? They opened their mouths in unison and joined their gatory voices in a growly warble, eerie yet strangely familiar. I peered into their gaping jaws. Not a single one had a missing or broken tooth in the front. The snaggletooth gator that bit Douglas Horton was still out there somewhere. I moved down the line, petting each for a moment, only to have them fall silent at my touch, one by one. All right, I said, and withdrew my hand from the littlest one at the end. Y'all need to back away from the fence now. We don't want Christy to see this and wonder what's going on. I waggled my hand, and the gators turned and lumbered away. I should have been shocked, but I wasn't. Of course they listened to me. In a convoluted way, that made irrational sense. After all, I was her mama. Grandma? Revered ancestor? Without thinking, I tipped my head back and growl sang a long, warbly note. The gators answered with a soft moan song of their own. As their weird crooning died away, another sound intruded from down the hall. Coming this way. Swap, swap, Christy. And another set of steps. No nonsense. Sorsha Aberdeen? Shit. If I left the way I came in, I'd run right into them. There was no place to hide unless I wanted to brave the razor wire defense around the pen and trust that my babies would hide me, which left a hard sprint to the door on the far wall. I reached it even as my zombie hearing told me the two women had paused to talk right outside the door. The only word I caught was alligators, but the second voice definitely belonged to Sorsha. Crap. I shoved my fob against the lock and prayed it would work on this door. The lock clicked. I yanked the door open and darted into what seemed to be a small library with a computer workstation, thankfully unoccupied, then pulled the door closed behind me just as the Christy Sorsha door swung open. Pulse racing, I listened to make sure there was no alarmed cry of, "Aha! Someone fled through the door over there," or the equivalent. Nope. Just murmured conversation. Crap. Now I wanted to know what they were saying. I pressed my ear to the crack between the door and jamb and willed my darling little parasite to give my hearing a boost. "I don't understand," Sorsha said. "How are these alligators connected to the outbreak?" "It's quite straightforward, really," Christy said, managing to sound only a little pompous. "The first case to present was Beckett Connor, who suffered a minor alligator bite the day before he died. When I heard that, I sent my people into the swamp to bring back any infected alligators they could find. These specimens weren't hard to spot. Look at the color, the eyes. Obviously, they're infected with LZ1 or a related strain." "Obviously," Sorsha replied, tone impossible to read. "Have you determined anything from studying them?" "Ah, well, I've only had the specimen since yesterday, and there are many other avenues to explore."
"I see. This is all very interesting." Sorsha paused a long moment. "The whole affair reminds me of zombies."
"Yes, isn't it fascinating?" Christy trilled a laugh. "The parallel to movie zombies has certainly crossed my mind."
"I'm well aware of the Louisiana Zombies-1 designation for LZ1, Dr. Charish. Amusing."
She didn't sound one bit amused.
"I'm more interested in whether you've seen anything zombie-like before. Anything at all."
Shit. What was Sorsha's angle?
"Before this?"
Christy laughed again, but it verged on nervous, not her typical smooth operator style.
"Movies, once or twice. Not my cup of tea, really."
"Mm-hmm." Pages flipped. "What can you tell me of the other researchers here? Aristonikis? Has he been helpful in your research?"
"Helpful?" I ground my teeth. It made him sound like he was Christy's assistant. Not that Christy did a damn thing to dispel that notion.
"Ari has been an absolute godsend," she gushed,
and I could practically see her putting her hands on her chest and batting her eyelashes.
"His assistance has allowed me..."
Lady? I whirled and landed in a fighting stance. A slender black man around my age stood in a doorway on the other side of the room. He wore a lab coat over jeans and a Star Wars t-shirt and carried a cup of coffee. He was shorter than me, which took a lot considering I was barely 5'3". "You're not allowed to be in here," he said, though he didn't seem too bent out of shape about it. Took a sip of his coffee. "This is a secured area. If someone else sees you, they'll ask me why I didn't call security. So you should go." He waggled his hand at me exactly as I had done to the gators. "Or I'll have to call."
"I can't leave the way I came in," I said, straightening from the silly fighting stance.
He cocked his head. "Were you sneaking around in the LZ1 suite too?"
"No. I work over there, but I didn't want to run into my supervisor."
"Supervisors?" He gave a nod of commiseration. "That's why I like the night shift." He lifted his chin toward the door to the gator room. "What's in there? Rumor has it alligators were brought in, but the sounds aren't like any gators I've ever heard. Creeps me out all night." Details are, classified. I offered him a helpless shrug. Sorry. Nothing to worry about, though. I promise.
Says the Trixie eavesdropper,
Short Guy said, his voice colored with humor. He hooked his thumb over his shoulder. Skedaddle, ninja girl. Out this way. The exit to the LZ-1 suite is down the hall to the left. I breathed a thanks as I passed. The corridor was deserted, but quiet voices drifted from somewhere. Following his directions, I escaped to our lab area, then paused in the corridor, listening carefully for Sorsha or Christy. No sign of either one. If I was lucky, the two were off making someone else's life miserable instead of mine. I scurried back to the main lab room. Beardzilla and Harry Tech worked heads down at the back table. Brian was doing his hourly sweep for listening devices as part of his normal security protocol. Dr. Nikas jerked his hand away from Christy's computer, looking guilty as hell.
Oh, it's only you, Angel,
he said quietly. I moved in close and kept my voice low.
What are you doing?
He slipped a thumb drive into his pocket.
Keeping tabs on Christy's work and progress. Everything in the lab is kept on the local computers. No cloud or outside server to protect the zombie information. Her data is encrypted, but we can unravel it.
Smart. You don't trust her.
Never again.
He looked a little sad at that, but then he straightened.
And I wanted her most recent activity safely acquired before I confront her over the gym death and her lack of communication.
Good plan, I said. Do you have results from the protein packet samples yet?
Jacques should have them later this morning. Then I will meet with Christy.
If you need someone to watch your back, or even just to supply loads of moral support, I'm here for you. He gave me a warm smile.
That hardly needs to be said.
I flushed, warmed by his unwavering trust in me. By the way, I overheard the FBI agent ask Christy if she'd ever seen anything zombie-like before. Seemed like an odd question to ask a scientist, made me feel a little uneasy. His brows drew together.
Troubling indeed. We'll see what comes of this visit.
With any luck at all, Sorsha would leave after talking to Christy. On a related note, when I went to check on the gators, I noticed most of them have wounds. I described the odd injuries. What's that all about? He frowned, perplexed.
We took small snips yesterday. Nothing at all like what you saw. I don't know what need she would have for more and larger tissue samples. She did not confer with me before taking them.
I glowered. That's because Christy thinks she's hot shit and in charge. Dr. Nikas sighed.
I'll have a word with her about that as well.
You need to start making a list, I said. Like Santa, except it's all of Christy's naughtiness. He cleared his throat, quickly squelching the ever-so-brief flash of amusement in his eyes.
Jacques called a few minutes ago with a report on Nick's condition. He's stable,
Dr. Nikas added quickly before I could freak out and imagine the worst.
There's been no change, which in our current scenario is good. However, I believe we can dispose of the theory that you infected Nick via saliva.
You mean kissing? How do you know that wasn't it?
Jacques found a mosquito bite on Nick's left arm.
I shook my head. That doesn't make sense. Nick was friggin' smothered in DEET. Dr. Nikas spread his hands.
Unfortunately, even the best repellent cannot offer perfect protection.
But he had on a long-sleeved shirt, I said. Sympathy filled his eyes.
He could have been bitten any time in the last 48 hours.
Something's not right. The cases in the morgue each had one mosquito bite. The majority of the shamblers in the gym only had one mosquito bite. Nick has one bite. What are the odds of that many people getting only one bite if there are mosquitoes around? Dr. Nikas exchanged a glance with Portia. but it was Rachel who spoke.
What are you saying, Angel?
I looked around the room as I tried to make sense of my thoughts. I'm saying maybe the mosquito bites aren't mosquito bites.
Chapter 33.
Well, that got everyone's attention.
I gulped as the enormity of what I was suggesting hit home. But if there was any chance it was true, I had to keep going.
What if someone is deliberately spreading the zombie epidemic using tiny little darts or something?
The CDC found traces of Adius albopictus saliva at the bite locations of the deceased,
Dr. Nikas said gently.
Seriously? How do they know it's albo, peck, or mosquito spit?
The presence of certain enzymes.
Oh, so much for that theory.
Maybe. I paused to seize another thought before it flitted away. Wait, I know it's a stretch, but if I wanted to intentionally spread the zombie disease and make it look like mosquitoes were doing it, I'd make sure that my little infectious darts or needles or whatever came with a side of skeeter spit.
Dr. Nikas's brows drew together.
That's a fair point. I'll ask Jacques to excise the bite area on Nick and test for Eugene and LZ1.
I blinked. They're different?
To the CDC, all cases are LZ1, since they don't know the cause and haven't yet discovered the parasite. We, too, assumed Eugene was the universal pathogen until yesterday, when I analyzed blood samples from the gym and the blood you recovered from the bowling alley.
Okay, I said. In other words, LZ1 is new, but kind of the same.
Correct. Eugene is the parasite mutation found in the cases we can trace directly back to you. Judd Seiler, from your bite, Douglas Horton, and Deputy Connor from the alligators that consumed Judd's remains. All other cases show a variation of Eugene.
A faint smile tugged at his mouth.
I would name it Eugene Jr., but I fear that would sow confusion with outside authorities. Therefore, I have adopted their blanket designation of LZ1 to use in reference to the new strain.
Damn. Eugene Jr. had more zing.
EJ1? But doesn't a different mutation make it even more likely that someone purposely caused the LZ1 epidemic?
It raises many questions. He patted my shoulder. We will see what Nick's mosquito bite shows.
Thanks, I breathed, warmed to my toes that he was taking my concerns seriously, or at least seriously enough to run more tests to prove me wrong.
Dr. Nikas typed in a text message to Jacques.
You know, Portia said, head tilted, just as a thought experiment, Angel's deliberate inoculation theory could potentially explain how groups of people turn shambler within minutes of each other.
Dr. Nikas took a step toward her.
You think all could have been inoculated with LZ1 at the same time?
Not necessarily. You tested the water bottles for traces of LZ1 and Eugene.
She said the name with no hesitation or scorn, which made me love her all the more.
But what if the water contained a stimulant, a hormone, perhaps, that could radically accelerate the LZ1 activation in someone already infected?
The look on Dr. Nikas's face was pure adoration.
Inoculate a group of individuals minutes to hours before, then trigger them all at once via an activator.
That makes sense, even to me, I said. Like soaking a sponge with gasoline. Nothing happens until you drop a lit match on it, then bam. Stick 'em with LZ1 whatever. Then the victims drink the activator water, and they go shambly within minutes.
Or leave them be, and they eventually turn anyway.
Dr. Nakis got that faraway look in his eyes that told me he was already leaps and bounds ahead and working through possibilities.
It's quite likely the stimulating substance would be harmless to people who had not been inoculated, meaning entire cases of water bottles could be treated.
Yes, Portia said. That would eliminate the need to ensure only inoculated people drank the water. And the victims who turned in groups yesterday were all together and drinking bottled water, I said. The bowling alley, the band. I'm betting the lawyers had bottled water in their meeting, too.
I have already confirmed the lawyers had nice springs water,
Dr. Nikas said as he sent another text.
The bottles you collected from the bowling alley are at the tribe lab. I've asked Jacques to run full analysis on them as well.
Wait one sec. I pulled up my phone and called Bear. Hey, it's Angel. When you were at the bowling alley, did you drink any bottled water?
They were giving away free bottled water, but I had a Coke Zero. Never opened my bottle.
Why? Not sure yet. If Jacques comes in to check you for a mosquito bite, don't give him a hard time, okay?
I checked myself, but hard to see everywhere. I'll behave.
Good deal. How's Nick?
No change,
he said, voice a bit rougher. We're going to get the cure, Bear. I promise. I held back a sigh of frustration. I gotta go now. I'll let you know when we have something. I hung up and shoved the phone into my pocket.
Let me guess, Portia said. He didn't drink the water.
Nope, I said. And he hasn't shambled. Yet. Dr. Nikas sent another text, then looked up, expression sober.
Very disturbing. If this hypothesis proves to be valid, it means that an organization or individual might truly be coordinating a deliberate spread of this terrible disease.
But, I said, Dr. Nikas didn't have his "we have the answer" face on. He remained silent for a long time.
Frankly, I'm baffled. Though your hypothesis has merit, I believe it would be impossible to develop a specifically altered strain of Eugene in the few days since Douglas Horton and Deputy Connor succumbed.
But it did alter, I said.
Given the 3+ weeks since Judd's demise, natural mutation could account for it. The only other option, purposefully directing the mutation to a desired stable outcome, is a time-consuming challenge with no guarantee of success.
He shook his head.
Additionally, whoever created it would be foolish to release LZ-1 into the wild without also having a cure at hand, lest they fall victim themselves, and developing a cure would take even more time.
So it's not possible?
I simply don't see how in such a short time frame, he said. Yet, I don't have the answer either, which is why I asked Jacques to run those tests. Science is about gathering data and being willing to accept the results.
I forced a crooked smile. Is it wrong for me to hope a bad guy is responsible for the epidemic, since that would mean a cure already exists?
It's not wrong, Angel,
he said, eyes warm with understanding.
And I can't deny that the hypothesis fits, except for the timing.
But why would anyone start an epidemic on purpose? I asked, then immediately shook my head. Duh. If they'd already developed a cure, an epidemic would mean treatments, pharmaceuticals, money.
Greed and the lust for power have been the driving forces behind any number of heinous acts,
Portia murmured.
Indeed,
Dr. Nikas said. For an instant, it looked like he wanted to take her hand. Then he pulled his gaze away.
We'll know more once Nick's bite and the water are analyzed.
Fighting an evil organization or person to get the cure was something tangible I could do. To help all the victims. To help Nick. I couldn't fight nature or science. My chest tightened, and stupid tears welled up. Dr. Nikas took my hand.
I believe we're close to a cure here, Angel.
Not close enough, I wanted to scream. Instead, I nodded, not trusting myself to say anything without bursting into full-blown tears. He was doing everything he could. We all were. I gently tugged my hand free, then stepped away to make a call. Hey, Dad, I said, voice thick. You okay, baby? No. I mean, yeah, I'm okay. I just wish we were on the other side of this shit, with Nick and everyone else fixed up and healthy again.
I get it, Angelkins.
The name wrapped around me like a warm hug.
You're out working your tail off while your boyfriend's in trouble. It's rough. But if anyone can come through this after wrestling that sickness into the dust, it's you.
My boyfriend. Nick and I hadn't even had time to talk about what we were to each other. But it felt right. I'm doing my best, Dad. I really am.
I know you are, baby. I seen you in action. Wish I could be more help with all this. But I ain't as smart as these other folks.
I scowled. First off, you are smart. You don't have the same experience in education, that's all. Huge difference. Second off, you are helping. You're staying safe, so I don't have to worry. And I bet you're keeping people's spirits up, too.
You know what I mean.
He sighed.
I wish I could do something. I want to stay busy so I don't fret so much about you.
Yeah, I get it. Well, I started out washing dishes and beakers and stuff. Everyone there kind of pitches in when it comes to keeping the place clean. So how about you sweep up or whatever?
I can do that. It'll be just like at the bar, but with less dead bugs.
A lot less. Hey, could you ask Rosario something for me?
Hang on, let me get a pen and paper.
Nah, this one's easy. Ask him if he told Christy about seeing Judd walk off into the swamp after being killed with the trank.
Okay, I think I got it.
Thanks, you can text me what he says. We exchanged love yous and hung up. I returned to sorting project results, feeling much lighter. My phone buzzed with a text about 5 minutes later. Yes, he told her, but not sure she believed him. Hey, Dr. Nikas, I said. What if someone had weeks instead of days to create LZ1 and a cure? He gave me a puzzled look.
How so?
I related what Rosario had said about seeing Judd walk off, and that he told Christy. What if she put two and two together and figured out Judd was some kind of zombie variant, then used that info to start working on the LZ1 mutation? Hell, she could have sent people into the swamp to find Judd's remains. Portia looked thoughtful. Dr. Nikas ran a hand over his hair in a rare show of consternation.
3 weeks could be sufficient for a researcher of her caliber. There's a problem with that,
Brian said.
We've been watching Dr. Charish closely in Chicago, and she hasn't set foot in a lab in the last 3 weeks.
Rachel cocked her head.
But she could have relayed the Judd info to Saberton R&D for them to do the work.
That's true, Brian said. We know there's a leak or a bug in our organization that we haven't pinned down yet.
A look of aggravation swept over his face.
So, let's assume that Monday, Saberton found out about Horton waking up and shambling in the morgue. Not only could that have triggered their gator hunt, and thanks to the leak, they knew precisely where to go, but it also presented the perfect opportunity to debut their new LZ1 toy, especially after Connor collapsed the next day. A case untraceable to Saberton that served to muddy the waters.
Rachel's brows knitted.
Why would Dr. Charish work with us against her own people?
I don't think she considers anyone her own people, Brian said with a snort.
Yeah, I said. Christy looks out for Christy. Right now, she's eaten up being in the limelight as the star researcher working toward a cure. Maybe she even wants to beat Saberton at their own game and release a cure before they do to undercut them, to be celebrated like Jonas Salk. You can bet your rosy red. Reno shoved the door open and entered. Christy followed, eyes on a printout, and went straight to her usual stool.
Ari, have you seen the analysis of the blood samples from the patient who died at the gym?
She asked, eyes on the reports.
The glutamate numbers are through the roof.
Yes, he said, and I have no explanation for it. I'll check the latest cultures.
Portia looked up.
I'll stay here and finish the extrapolations. That would be quite helpful, he said, as warmly as if he'd told her the heavens were in her eyes.
He turned and exited the lab, pausing only to gently touch Reg's shoulder and ask if the tech would accompany him. Reg responded with a nod and smile, then left with Dr. Nikas. Christy's mouth pursed in a frown as she put the printouts aside and logged on to the computer. I sidled up to her, ignoring the dirty look Reno gave me.
Hey, Christy, I murmured. Why'd you cut on the gaiters?
She didn't bother to look up.
Samples.
Taking out chunks of hide is pretty fucking harsh.
They're already healing, zombie gaiters, remember?
That's not the point.
Sacrifices must be made to find a cure, she said as if lecturing a child. If you aren't prepared for that, I suggest you excuse yourself from this research facility, especially before I have the brains removed from the little ones later.
Whether she was serious or just fucking with me, her comment succeeded in stoking my zombie mama protective instinct to volcano hot. I leaned close and snarled.
Better damn well clear it with Dr. Nikas before you mess with those gators again.
I knew he would never hurt them unless there was no other way to the cure. She swiveled the stool to face me, fire in her eyes.
Those alligators are mine.
No, bitch, they're mine.
I met her gaze with my own inferno. If you hurt them, I'm gonna make sure you get to spend time with them, up close and personal.
Oh, goodness, am I supposed to be scared?
Only if you're smart. I straightened. What did the FBI agent want? Christy smiled smugly and turned back to the computer.
Agent Aberdeen was interested in my process and progress.
Your progress? I sneered. You're not flying solo here.
Don't get your panties in a twist, Angel. It's merely a turn of phrase. I was the one she was interviewing.
Then why did you let her think Dr. Nikas was your assistant?
She slanted a look at me.
Eavesdroppers often mishear things.
You said he was a godsend because of his assistants. What did you say to counter that?
If you don't know, then obviously you weren't included in the conversation.
I clamped down on a heated retort as Dr. Nikas returned without Reg, but with another sheaf of papers. He dropped them on the desk beside Christy, and I stepped away. Just as well. I needed out of that conversation before I ended up slugging her pert little chin. While Dr. Nikas and Christy conferred, I busied myself with necessary scut work, fetching printouts, sterilizing supplies, and even making coffee. At one point, Rachel passed me a handful of brain chips, telling me I needed to keep my strength up. After I gladly accepted them, she casually offered Fritz a chip.
No, thank you,
he said, expression stern and serious. He flicked a quick glance toward Christy, then added quietly,
I wouldn't want to have a brain fart.
Rachel pressed her lips together to hold back laughter and gave him a slow, you win, nod. He replied with a damn straight dip of his chin and went back to being a mean, tough bodyguard. Around 20 minutes later, Christy slid off the stool and gathered up her papers.
I'll be in the microscope room trying to get to the bottom of this, she announced,
and snapped her fingers.
Tex, with me.
As she stalked off, Harry Tech and Beardzilla leaped up as if their chairs had turned into cactuses, and hurried after her with Fritz following. The sound of Christy's wedges faded down the hall, but before I could celebrate her departure, I heard her say,
"Agent Aberdeen, back so soon."
"I never left," came the gravelly reply. "There are still a few people I'd like to talk to."
"She means me," I gasped, and looked around wildly for an escape. Hide under the table? Yeah, that would totally fool her, if she'd gone completely blind in the last half hour. The only other door was the walk-in fridge. "Don't tell her I'm in here." I dashed into the fridge, pulled it closed to a thin crack, and peeked out. Sorsha opened the lab door with Christy on her heels. Christy looked flustered.
"I'm happy to make time to answer."
Sorsha stopped abruptly and pivoted to face her.
"No need. I'll find you after I've spoken to Dr. Nikas."
With no further warning, she shut the door in Christy's face. I closed myself in the fridge before she could see me, even as I silently celebrated the glorious snub. Too late, I realized I should have grabbed a lab coat on the way in. The fridge was kept at 34 degrees, like the cooler at the morgue. Fine and dandy for a few minutes, but who knew how long Sorsha would stick around? I could barely make out her voice, but no matter how much I strained my ears and begged my parasite for help, the words remained unintelligible. The cold of the fridge raised goosebumps on my arms, and I bounced in place and hugged myself in a pathetic effort to stay warm. I was a delicate southern flower, and anything below 50 degrees required a parka. I jerked as my phone buzzed. My dad. I'd call him back as soon as Sorsha left. I sent it to voicemail. But a few seconds later, it buzzed again. Crap. Maybe something bad had happened. No. This time it was Portia's number. Puzzled, I hit answer, then remained silent as the sound of